The court will proceed to the fifth case, the United States versus Goins. Mr. Berman.
May it please the court, I'm Morris Berman, and I represent George Goins in this court, and I represented him in the district court. Mr. Goins' appeal involves a challenge to the warrantless search of his home up in La Crosse, Wisconsin, at 1024 Caledonia, a warrantless search that was based on a purported consent of Kalina Bratton, with whom he had a relationship at the time. And the district court found that while Ms. Bratton did not have actual authority to consent to that warrantless search of his home, that the police reasonably relied on her apparent authority to consent to it. There's also a search of a gun case and seizure of a gun from the home involved in this appeal. And the district court, with respect to that, adopted a report and recommendation of the magistrate judge, which found that Ms. Bratton had neither the actual nor the apparent authority to consent to a seizure of the gun case and its search of that gun case, but that it was nonetheless admissible under a plain view, inevitable discovery type of rationale. It's our assertion here that it was not reasonable to rely on Ms. Bratton, that she did not have apparent authority to consent to that search, and in addition that the police failed in the duty, a duty that this court has found in numerous cases.
How did she get the key?
I'm sorry?
How did she get the key?
And, you know, in 4 hours of suppression hearing that we had back in March, the government never elicited testimony about that. And Marion Byerson, who was all too willing to volunteer testimony, much to my chagrin, didn't say how Ms. Bratton asserted she got the key. Mr. Goins said she must have taken it or something because he never gave her a key. The point is that while the key gave her...
He said he never gave her a key.
He said he never gave her the key.
But she clearly had a key.
She had a key, and she allowed the officers in there, and they went in there and did their sweep and waited for Byerson to come back and talk to her further, and then they conducted this full search where they found the contraband, the crack, in George's closet, in George's coat pocket, and the gun case. But in 4 hours of that suppression hearing, not one witness said that Kalina Bratton claimed, hey, George gave me this key. He gave me this key so I can come and go and take care of his place, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, was there any testimony about, you know, her being in there, you know, having used the key? And you said there was a four-hour hearing. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's a critical thing. How'd she get the key? And, you know, if she had a key and he knew it, then that's pretty strong evidence for her having apparent authority to.
And it's my and it's my
consent.
Sure. And it's my recollection of the record that's not what happened. And so while the key is certainly one factor that is in favor of her at least apparent authority,
she told the police officers that she had the key and she had authority to go in and out.
She
said she lived there part-time.
Well, she claimed she
and
pretty
she
much
left her clothes there and other things.
And
she did his cleaning and housekeeping. And
he had a pretty good deal here. She
had
the key and going and do his laundry.
Well, it turned out not to be such a good deal. But
yeah, that's right. You got to be very careful about those good
but
deals.
There were a number of factors undercutting those assertions, and that ties into our argument that the police were actually faced with not this clear-cut authority or apparent authority or not a reasonable reliance on her authority to consent to a search, but they had a whole bunch of factors which undercut this. From the beginning, a fairly implausible story that, hey, she was kicked in the backside and she's afraid of him, and
you
yet...
Hold on a minute. You think that's an implausible story?
It is when she says then she stays around there
to tidy up. Oh, yeah. Women go back and forth and get the hell kicked out of them on a regular basis and come right back for more. It's been going on since Adam and Eve.
But they also,
I wouldn't doubt that Adam kicked her, too, now that I think about it.
They also knew she had her own place. They also knew that she had children, and when they undertook their sweep search of the place, they saw no indication of children being there whatsoever. She also claimed that she was arranging to have mail sent there, but her name wasn't on the mailbox. There was no mail forwarded there. There was no mail from any address to her there. they knew she didn't pay any rent there. They knew that she didn't pay any utilities there. Although she claimed that she was doing his laundry, that was essentially an uncorroborated assertion by her because there's no washer or dryer there.
Well, let me ask you a hypothetical. Let's say the police came there and she said, I've got a key. I go in, come and go in this place all I want. And they said, well, why don't you go up, you use the key, go in, and if there's any cocaine or guns or anything like that, bring it out to us.
Convert it to a so-called private search.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that at that point she would pretty clearly be an agent of the police circumventing the warrant requirement if they enlist her aid and say, hey, we can't do it, but we're going to...
Why is that any different than if they would have said, make a telephone call and record it, and we'll talk to them about, you know, the cocaine you have in your place?
Because you're not circumventing the warrant requirement. There is no warrant requirement to have a telephone conversation with them and to have another party listening in on that telephone conversation, at least not under federal law. Some state laws would forbid that. But so that's why it's different. I think in enlisting them as a sort of sub rosa law enforcement officer and say, go search this, we can't.
Well, it's different. It's sort of a more misplaced trust situation than... And I agree, if the police pick some stranger and say, go break into that house and bring out anything that shouldn't be there, that's they're clearly acting at the behest of the police. But if you give a key to your house to your girlfriend and she ends up, you have a spat and she turns on you, well, I don't know that whose fault that ought to be.
Well, I mean, that's certainly one of the underlying rationales of this whole third-party consent area of law, the sort of assumption of the risk type thing. But you know, that's not what happened here, and there just isn't that evidence that came out at that hearing that she even claimed that George Goines gave her that key. So there were a number of factors undercutting that. And the plain view doctrine, which is how the gun case and the gun gets admitted, because that doesn't come in under actual apparent authority, that requires that the police lawfully be in a position from which to view the object. And that's our position, is that's not what happened here, that police weren't lawfully in there. They're in there without a warrant. They're in there without actual authority on the part of Kalina Bratton. They're in there without reasonable reliance on her apparent authority. I see time for rebuttal. Light is on. So unless the court has any other questions, I'll reserve.
All right. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Berman.
You.
Mr. Anderson?
Good morning. My name is Robert Anderson. I'm the Assistant United States Attorney on this case. I have the privilege of representing the government. Sufficient probability, not certainty, is the touchstone of reasonableness under the Fourth Amendment. That's exactly what the Supreme Court said in Illinois versus Rodriguez. And what the defendant is trying to direct us to is a certainty, or he wants an absolute determination as to the authority of an individual to give consent to search a house. The district court here, however, properly determined the police reasonably, and in good faith too, relied upon the live-in girlfriend's apparent authority to them at the time to consent to the search of his home based on what they were told by the girlfriend, confirmed also by their own observations, the indicia of her access, her control, and her residence at that home.
Do you think it's important at all how she actually got the key, or just that as long as she says, hey, I here's the key, I have it, and I come and go here as I please, come on, that's enough?
How she got the key, although the court, this court, I think, U.S. versus Rodriguez, said there seems to be little distinction now between the apparent authority, or the basis of apparent authority, and an actual authority. How she got the key would have been important had the court made its decision based on her actual authority. Then it would have been better for us to have had her there and had her testify, I got this key from him, he gave this to me, and he gave me the authority to do this. We're dealing with apparent authority.
Just to get to the point, as long as they had a reasonable belief that what she was saying was true, that she had the key and comes and goes, that's enough for apparent authority, and we don't have to be concerned with
that. That is an important criteria for the apparent authority. She tells them she has a key to the apartment. They go to the apartment to help her retrieve her items because she says, I want to get out of there. I want police to escort me there to get my personal belongings out of there because I don't know if he's there. I don't know if he's going to be violent again with me. I want the safety of having the police there. They go with her. They see her open the apartment with a key. They didn't ask her how she got the key or at what date she got the key. She said she'd been living there for 5 months, she told them. Their reasonable assumption is that she's been living there for 5 months. She says she's been doing his laundry, his cooking. She's been a live-in girlfriend, essentially. Their assumption is she got the key legitimately for that purpose because she's the live-in girlfriend and he wants his laundry done when he's not there, so she has a key to get in and take care of his place. She not only says she's been there living there 5 months, not only had the key, but he himself, when he testified, confirmed that in fact, yes, she did do his laundry. And the fact that the police didn't see a washer dryer there means nothing because, you know, objectively he confirmed, yeah, she was doing that. She was taking the clothes somewhere else. But she had access to his clothes in that apartment. Not just her own clothes, which were, when the police came, they see her not only open the door with the key, but they see, and she says, there's a bag of my clothing there ready to go. She says she has all other personal belongings. They see her retrieve those other personal belongings, all before demonstrating to them also her knowledge of the layout of the house and what's in the house by also pointing out to them or telling them, look, he's got drugs in the house, I know. Now, she wasn't, where she saw the drugs before she left the house, they ended up in a different place. But she also said she knew there was a gun underneath the couch of the home. And that's indeed where the gun turned out to be. So even if you wanted to consider, well, what's the extent of her authority and her roam over this apartment? The gun is underneath a couch in a common area of the apartment which she has access to. She tells the police. They look under the couch. They see the case. Now, Mr. Berman's point about the court's ruling is the court, in actuality, ruled that it didn't believe that she had authority to grant the police consent to go into the case. And that's following in line with United States versus Rodriguez, the case where the woman opened the janitor's room downstairs that she had a key to for her husband, the janitor, and there the court said, well, she had authority and access to that room, but his personal containers and belongings in there she didn't have authority over. That's what the court said. She wouldn't have had authority to give consent to open that case, although she did testify that she had opened that case herself and seen the gun in there. But that wasn't the basis on which the court said it was still okay to seize the gun. Detective Byerson, when he looked under the couch, saw the case, said, based on his training and experience, he knew that case that he saw under the couch was one that typically and usually carries a gun or conceals a gun. And he also knew at that time and believed that Mr. Goins was a convicted felon. Seeing the gun case under there, he then had probable cause. It was in plain view to the extent that he was given consent to look around the open area that she did have access to. He then saw the gun case in plain view, had probable cause there was a gun in there, and could open it at that point on probable cause. Or he could have gone and gotten a search warrant for the firearm and any ammunition in the house, would have been able to search the entire rest of the house, eventually finding the drugs which were in the closet anyway, under the inevitable discovery doctrine. And that is what the court concluded and based its conclusions upon. So the court was correct in finding that the police did act reasonably. It demonstrated certainly their good faith in acting reasonably by calling the district attorney and asking him whether they needed to come and get a search warrant or whether they should act upon the consent that she had given. And therefore, it also demonstrates that there's nothing to be gained, as this court and the Supreme Court have said in addressing apparent authority. There's nothing to be gained in the exclusionary rule by suppressing evidence because the police didn't know a particular fact that Mr. Berman believes they should have explored further. They acted reasonably. And trying to attack her credibility or the actual circumstances of her authority to grant consent to search the apartment is not relevant where we're dealing with the apparent authority. If there are no other questions, I'll rest at that point.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Berman?
Well, I respectfully disagree with Mr. Anderson that we're looking for a certainty. What we're looking for here is for the government and for the police to fulfill the obligation that this court set out in Monville v. Lewis to investigate further when the facts and circumstances are ambiguous or problematic as to the person's authority to consent. This is a warrantless search situation. It's not one under Leon, which is a search warrant situation. It's not one where good faith doctrines save an otherwise invalid search. She said she'd been living there for 5 months. There was not indicia of 5 months residency there. They also knew that she actually lived and had a lease for a place about 2 miles away in La Crosse. They knew she had a leasehold there.
She told them that. Staying there for...
That's what she...
You know, that she's, like, in for a couple of days and then gone. And it wasn't that she was exclusively living there.
Which is 1024 Caledonia?
At the Goins house here, that she wasn't exclusively living there.
I think it's quite clear that she wasn't exclusively living there. I don't think there's any dispute she had the other place.
Isn't that what she told the police?
That she was coming and going?
Yeah.
Right. That's what she told Byerson. That's what she told. She might have told Jansky that. As to her belongings that she purportedly had, the police and Jansky testified that he actually saw her retrieve those after the search. That was on page 35 of the suppression hearing. So what they had was a white plastic bag that Jansky never looked in, never even confirmed that it had women's clothes in it, and belongings that she went around retrieving after the search had been accomplished. And George Goins' testimony at the hearing in March, of course, has no bearing on whether this laundry issue was corroborated at the time of the search in December of 2004. Unless the court has anything else, I'll sit down.
You don't. All right. Thanks to both counsel.
Thank you.
And Mr. Berman, an additional thanks for accepting the appointment in this case and ably representing the defendant.